Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. An Airbus A350 software bug forces the airlines to turn planes off and on again every 149 hours. Virgin's Hyperloop One company has signed a deal with the government of Saudi Arabia to build a test track for its futuristic transport concept. Yet another crowdfunded game has become an exclusive to the Epic Games Store. Mech Warrior 5 Mercenaries release has been delayed to December and won't be on Steam as its backers expected. And you can run Android on Nintendo Switch, and it runs entirely from your SD card. That's right, the built-in OS remains intact, and you can jump back and forth between OSs by simply rebooting. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. An Airbus A350 software bug forces the airlines to turn planes off and on again every 149 hours. Some models of the airliner still need to be hard rebooted after exactly 149 hours, despite warnings from the EU Aviation Safety Agency, or EASA, first issued 2 years ago. In a mandatory airworthiness directive reissued just over a week ago, EASA urged operators to turn their A350s off and on again to prevent, quote, partial or total loss of some avionics systems or functions, end quote. The revised directive, effective from July 26, exempts only those new A350-941s which had modified software preloaded on the production line. For all other A350-941s, operators still need to completely power the airliner down before it reaches 149 hours of continuous power on time. Concerningly, the original directive was brought about in 2017 by, quote, in-service event where a loss of communication occurred between some avionics systems and avionics networks, end quote. The impact of the failures ranged from redundancy loss to, quote, complete loss on a specific function hosted on common remote data concentrator and core processing input-output modules, end quote. In lay terms, this means that prior to 2017, at least some A350s flying passengers were suffering unexplained failures of potentially flight-critical digital systems. It is common for airliners to be left powered on while parked at airport gates so maintainers can carry out routine system checks between flights, especially if the aircraft is plugged into ground power. The remedy for the A350-941 problem is straightforward. Install Airbus software updates for a permanent cure or switch the airplane off and on again. Affected airlines are Air France, American Airlines, Delta Airlines, and Lufthansa, as well as Air China and Taiwan's China Airlines. Wow. So they don't actually say what the critical failures may be.
Which, Henry, what kind of failures could you have that would lead to...
Boeing's not alone anymore. I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, it's if it was more critical, they would be more pushy about it, like we saw with the 737 MAX.
Yeah, it could be like the toilet doesn't flush or something.
Yeah, no.
Sensors probably,
yeah,
right?
When you're talking about that kind of stuff, I'm guessing that it's hopefully non-critical systems. So, like, if it's just like... Because everything's digital nowadays in airplanes, right? Yeah. Especially with Airbus planes, because Airbus believes the philosophy of the plane knows how to fly, well, as Boeing thinks that the pilot knows how to fly. So in a Boeing plane, you can normally stall the plane as a pilot, but an Airbus plane, you can't because it's all electronic, right? Like, they trust the plane more. So to hear that they have, like, such a technical issue on an Airbus plane is kind of concerning, right? Because it's more electronically controlled than a standard Boeing plane, right? Mm. But again, everything's fly-by-wire nowadays. Everything's electronically controlled. So hopefully it's nothing too critical, like the flight controls or anything. But
right. Well, the other question is, how easy is it to turn a plane off and on? Like, is it something you could conceivably just do preemptively before any flight? Like,
yeah, it's not that hard to do, but as we saw with today's earlier story, it does take time for instruments to know where they are. You have to put in your, like, exact coordinates again. You have to do all that stuff. So, and in an industry where time is money, it adds time, right? So why not just you keep certain systems on? If it's a quick turnaround, then go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so don't be silly. Update your planes.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, you're talking delayed flights. If you're sitting on a tarmac having to reboot the computer and go through all the pre-flight checks and everything else.
Right, but there are times when the plane doesn't, like, seem to be doing anything. Now, I know that it is, but it doesn't seem to be. Like, when it's getting de-iced through the winter, it's sitting on the tarmac and it's just being sprayed. Could you then power it off and power it back on in that moment?
Technically, no. Like, the systems that they're talking about, it sounds like they're flight critical systems. So going on my point from before, again, like the gyros and stuff, at each gate, they have the assigned, like, geo exact coordinates.
Yeah.
So like your inertial units, you can't turn those off. Because then you'd have to go back and, like, read it and put the numbers. So, like, if you're in, like, an iced-in airport where you're, like, sitting down there for, like, 2 or 3 hours, they wouldn't be able to turn it off, right?
Yeah, so it's ticking away against your 149.
That's time on the hour.
Now, Henry, I've only ever flown a drone. How do they take an Airbus and flip it over and turn it?
I know. So then they just, like, do everything, right?
And
just,
if you,
like,
know, you know.
Yeah, if they know, they know. Yeah. But
so I guess just update, like, the software.
Just update your software. Yeah.
Is there any cost? Like, do they, like, what would stop them from updating the software?
At this point, it's almost like updating your iPad or, like, Android.
Like, are they running Windows XP?
Yeah. The main issue is that in aviation, everything's so scrutinized, right? So, like, they have to be approved in the FAA in the States, like, every single update, right? So, and Europe's really hard about that as well. Same here in Canada. Like, they have to approve each and every update by the government, whoever's running the authority, right?
So I did notice that Canadian Airlines weren't on the list of the affected airlines. Does that mean we just don't have these planes?
Yeah, we just don't have those models.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, like, for example, WestJet only has smaller planes, right? So
yeah.
We're safe, guys.
Wondered maybe we weren't affected because we did the update, but no, we just don't have them.
Yeah, we don't have those. Sorry, guys.
Virgin's Hyperloop One company has signed a deal with the government of Saudi Arabia to build a test track for its futuristic transport concept. The Hyperloop concept involves a pressurized pod with a vehicle carrying passengers or cargo up to 10 times faster than current rail. A 35-kilometer track will be built alongside a research and development facility and manufacturing plant north of Jeddah. Some remain skeptical that Hyperloop travel can become a reality. Virgin Hyperloop One said the technology could reduce a journey from Riyadh to Jeddah to 76 minutes, compared with more than 10 hours currently. Wow. The company showed off a pod traveling at over 100 kilometers an hour, or 62 miles per hour, in a 500-meter vacuum tube in Nevada in July 2017. Meanwhile, Elon Musk has been running an annual competition at his SpaceX headquarters to test the limits of the technology. This year's contest was won by an engineering team from a Technical University of Munich. Afterwards, Mr. Musk tweeted the 2020 event would be run in a new 10-kilometer curved vacuum tunnel.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. I know that there are people who are skeptical. I feel like fast travel is, it's going to be hot, right? Like, because there are so many cities, like densely populated cities, and people want to get from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be so much time and attention put into this that it will be a thing that'll happen in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Like by 2020.
As we've seen in the past, though, I think it just comes down to, with the speed, if something is going to go wrong, it's going to go catastrophically wrong.
Right.
And I think that's the danger or the hesitation in a lot of cases, because it's not a small thing. It's like an airplane, like, It's like it's devastating if an airplane goes down. It's devastating if one of these things crashes.
Right, but there is no mode of transportation that we do that doesn't have some level of risk. Like walking in the winter, like you can, like there is
in
nothing.
In Canada,
yes. There is no mode of transportation that can't potentially hurt you. Right. So Hyperloop, yes, because of the speed, could kill you. Faster.
That'll be fast.
Instant.
that's a pro.
But it's not like
not to put
car.
A dark spin
no,
on it.
No, but it's not like a car is riskless, and we all drive those, so we might as well cut down the time to travel from one place to another. I know that there are risks, but they'll be so scared of the bad press of having an injury that they're going to prevent that as much as they can.
Yeah, I think we're going to be surprised, Robbie, because there's this huge push of like green transportation, and
that's true too.
I know I'm a hypocrite because I'm like, oh, save the environment. Meanwhile, I'm flying airplanes. But at the same time, it's just like, yeah, it's dangerous, but they might start off with like cargo first and just say, hey, let's use it for mail or just in time shipping, and then they can expand to passengers from there. But yeah, it's like a green. Way to send people from Montreal to Toronto or New York to Chicago.
In an unbelievably short amount of time.
Yeah. Really, really good point with the cargo. Okay, so there are places, what are they called? Like, are they called urban deserts where there's no food in that particular, like no fresh food in that part of the city? Could you imagine if they had Hyperloops that could just like truck in mass amounts of, and then by truck, I mean Hyperloop, pod in like fresh produce and it would happen so quickly and efficiently it wouldn't cost anything to feed these urban centers that really rely on nothing but frozen preserved foods.
Because space is an issue as well, right? But the thing is that it's expensive because like they're digging the tunnels underground, but it also saves space above ground, right? So you don't have to build another highway. You can actually put stuff you need there instead of a roadway. So that can also save space too.
I like this.
What do you guys think?
I'm eager to see what comes of it.
Yet another crowdfunded game has become an exclusive to Epic Game Store. Mech Warrior 5 Mercenaries release has been delayed to December, and it won't be on Steam as backers had expected. It's becoming a familiar story as what was a crowdfunded game expected to be available everywhere has become an Epic Game Store exclusive for the next 12 months. That means it won't be available on Steam, despite many who have already pre-ordered it doing so with the assumption that it would be. It's hardly the first time that that's happened, though, as Epic continues to sign up as many games as possible to keep them off Steam. As frustrating as it is, the anger with which PC gamers have treated the trend has been extreme, even by gamer standards. But Epic shows no sign of backing down and maintains it's the best way to establish their online store. On their blog, developer Piranha Games has said that they'll refund anyone that isn't happy about the news as long as they get in contact by September 1st. The other big news story for the game, though, is that it's been delayed from its original release date of September 10th to December 10th of this year. That said, a closed beta is now planned for November, and anyone that's pre-ordered it will get automatic access to several of the final game's practice missions.
That's interesting. So, it almost feels like they're giving it more time. Like, okay, Epic has bought it, and now they're going to put it through its paces before it's released to make sure that it's up to Epic standards. Can you say that?
Yeah. How many people do you think are going to be so upset about this news, though,
tons.
That they'll ask for a refund, right?
Sure.
So then wouldn't that
unless
take
you
away?
Want to opt into your... early access. But your early access is still later than the original release date.
Yeah. But then wouldn't this take away from the funding of developing it beyond from September through December when they see how many people want a refund?
Yeah.
Like, well, if there was a mass gamer movement...
Crowdfunding is so tough.
No.
There won't be a mass gamer movement?
There will be, but the big thing with Epic right now is that they have the money to support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the main issue with Epic versus Steam is that Epic is letting the game developers get more money out of it, right? So let's say if Steam charges 10% commission but when they sell a game, Epic would only charge 5%, right? So there's an inclination of Yeah, we should go to Epic. But again, Epic doesn't have all the same good features, everything else that Steam does. So a lot of gamers are angry because Epic is stealing, quote-unquote stealing, again, both sides of the argument, their games. Because there's a lot of Kickstarter games. There's a lot of these games like, I think, Phoenix Point, Shenmue, all these other games that were going to be on Steam. We're marketed as being on Steam. Mm-hmm. But now Epic has paid them out. And now they're only going to be Epic exclusive or Epic exclusive for X amount of time, right? So it's really sucky for the players.
Right.
If it matters if you like Steam or not, but it just...
Can you not have both Steam and Epic?
You can, but there's been a lot of controversy about Epic, though. Like, there's been a lot of... In the sense that, A, it doesn't have a lot of basic features. So, like, when you log into Steam, obviously you have the games, but there's, like, a lot of social, market, community things. But with Epic Game Launcher, there's been some, like, security issues. Again, don't quote me on this. You can Google it yourself. But there's been, like, a lot of controversy about that, right? Because with Epic Store, they don't have a lot of infrastructure with that. With that being said, it's still a new idea, right? It's still a new store, which is great for the consumer, you'd think, because more competition, better pricing, right? But the issue is that Steam isn't doing anything to counteract this, right? If Steam wants to win, all they have to do is lower the commission cost of selling a game to, like, 5%.
Oh, right.
And the owners of Epic have actually said, look, if you lower your costs, we'll stop stealing games. If you believe them or not, that's your choice.
Right.
But it's literally come down to that. So it's mixed feelings right now throughout the community.
I'm fairly new to Steam. I only ended up getting Steam when I got my VR headset. So that's when I was introduced to Steam, but I don't know about Epic at all. I don't know a lot about the politics between the two.
Well, if you want to play a game, it's fun. Just play a game, right? Yeah. And, like, nothing says you can't enjoy Epic. Like, it has plenty of positives, but again, as I'm a little bit biased, Linux, Steam, etc., I prefer Steam myself. But again, if that doesn't matter to you, if you still want to play your awesome game on a different platform, power to you. You do that, right? But
Who does Epic run with? Like,
Epic is run by Epic, because there's what is it? There's Unity, and then there's what's the other game?
Unreal Engine.
Yeah, Epic owns Unreal Engine.
Oh.
So, like, it's the same company, so it's like the same launcher. If that makes sense.
Oh, okay, it does make sense.
So it's just like I dabbled in like the Unreal Engine for a bit. It's like the same launcher, so it's just like you have your game creation engine, and then you have like your Epic Game Store, and then you have all these other things. But it's just that they're swimming in the Fortnite money right now. That's
sure.
Yes.
Yeah, and part of that is we don't want to give away our commission.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
So Steam isn't doing anything, but they don't really have to do anything right now because there's a lot of they still have a large user base that say we like our market, we like our everything else right they're, now, mm-hmm. right? So
brand loyal.
Brand loyalty.
Comment below if it affects you or how you feel about it. Personally, I'm indifferent.
Just a store's a store.
Yeah, install either or both or.
Well, yeah. The thing I would say about it is I am on Steam and I wouldn't have thought to go elsewhere at all. I didn't know.
Yeah, but if another game says you need Epic Game Store, then all right.
Yeah, put that in. Hey, we do it anyways, right? You have Origin, Steam, good old games. Twitch.
Wow.
You just have more software on your computer. That's all it
there
is.
There you
right?
go. Yeah.
Speaking of games, you can run Android on Nintendo Switch, and it runs entirely from your SD card. That's right. The built-in OS remains intact, and you can jump back and forth between OSs by simply rebooting. The Nintendo Switch isn't a device that we would usually associate with Android development. However, thanks to the hard work by XDA senior member Langer Haynes and XDA junior member bylaws, any hackable Nintendo Switch typically devices sold before July 2018 can now boot Lineage OS 15.1 directly from the SD card. Lineage OS 15.1 on the Nintendo Switch has basically everything you've come to expect from Lineage OS. You get all of your basic Android features, support for Google services, and even support for native NVIDIA Shield applications. That means you can play Half-Life and Portal on the go and even make use of GeForce Now if you're part of the beta. The Joy-Cons and Nintendo Pro Controller work without a hitch. Keyboard and mouse works when docked pretty much anything that can work will work. It's a spectacular port of Android and one that's well worth setting up if you have a spare SD card. Installing Android on your Nintendo Switch does not touch the main OS installed on it, so you don't need to worry about breaking anything. If you want to get started, check out the Switch Root Lineage OS 15.1 thread we've hot linked at cat5.tv/switch Android. Switch Android.
Got cut off a little bit on the teleprompter, but I knew it because I wrote it.
Thank you.
That is too cool. Absolutely awesome.
I mean, it's
awesome. You feel kind of limited by what the Switch provides, but it's fantastic. I mean, the kids love it, and it does everything they need it to do, but to be able to take it and turn it into a tablet at the same time, now all of a sudden, hey, take your tablet with you, take your Switch with you. It's just all one device.
That's great.
Perfect.
I love that you can just do it with the SD card. You don't have to do anything to the built-in storage.
Yeah, there's no risk at all of breaking anything. You can do it.
Oh, there's always risk. We'll find a way to break it.
Oh, yeah, give it to me.
But, yeah, that's cool. Very good stuff.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson.
And I'm Henry Bailey Brown.